Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about some of the many non-traditional students attending American colleges and universities. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about some American English expressions using the word dream. And as we do every Sunday, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will tell you about the surprising election of Harry Truman as president. So you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So let's get started. Here's higher education correspondent Pete Musto.
There is a commonly held belief in the United States about the best path to a college education. Many Americans would say this path involves graduating from high school at age 17 or 18, then going off to university to live and study for just 4 years. And, at the end of that term, receiving a degree. But that is not as usual a path as people might think. U.S. Department of Education research suggests that the majority of undergraduate college students take a less traditional approach. Carrie Dwyer is an example. She graduated from high school in 2005 and began studying physical therapy at Temple University in Philadelphia. But after her first year, she decided she wanted to study nursing instead. Dwyer moved back home and began seeking an associate's degree at Montgomery College in Tacoma Park, Maryland, in 2006. However, medical issues forced her to take time off school. She started working full-time and going to school part-time. Dwyer faced several difficulties, but she says nothing was as hard as returning to school after she took the time off. In 2010, Dwyer completed her associate's degree, also called a 2-year degree. She was 24. Then she joined the Army. Using the money she earned, Dwyer completed a bachelor's degree at Fayetteville State University in North Carolina in 2015. Now married with 3 children, She says she does not mind that it took her almost 10 years to complete her education. In the end, she says she only put in all the effort because she wanted to.
Ultimately, all that matters is that I got my degree done. I didn't get it for anyone else. I did it for me specifically to follow my goals and my aspirations.
Strayer University is a for-profit college with centers all over the country. Earlier this year, Strayer worked with the media company U.S. News and World Report to create the 2016 College Experience Survey. The researchers gathered information from 1,000 U.S. undergraduate students. The study findings showed that 70% of the students questioned were non-traditional. But what does non-traditional mean? The Strayer report identifies non-traditional college students in several ways. A student who passes general educational development tests instead of earning a high school diploma is considered non-traditional. So is a student who works more than 35 hours a week or studies part-time while seeking a bachelor's degree. And a student who was 25 years or older when they last took classes or when they graduated is also considered non-traditional. Information from the U.S. Department of Education suggests the non-traditional student population may be growing. In 2013, the department reported 29% of undergraduates were between 18 and 24 years old, studying full-time in four-year degree programs. Carl McDonnell is the chief executive officer of Strayer Education, the company that owns Strayer University. McDonnell says there are so many non-traditional students now because many see education as the best way to reach new opportunities. But, he adds, non-traditional students also have much different needs.
Over the last 5 to 10 years, we've had a more challenging labor market. So as people try to find well-paying jobs and or move up in their organization, a college degree is becoming more and more important. You might even say essential. And the types of programs that higher education needs to pursue, they tend to be things that are flexible in nature.
McDonnell notes that most of the students at Strayer University are non-traditional. They are often older people with years of work experience and families to raise. This means they need to be able to attend classes during the times that they are not working or caring for others, he says. McDonnell argues that most schools are much more concerned with their traditional students. Online courses, like the ones Strayer offers, are increasingly useful for non-traditional students, he says. But others suggest there is more schools need to do for non-traditional students than just offering classes over the internet. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Anna Mateo.
And now, join us for Words and Their Stories, a program from VOA Learning English. On this show, we talk about the origins and meanings of common expressions in American English. Every week, we dream up topics you might find interesting. Well, we also do research, but today we have dreamt up a show on dreams. Dreams are the visions we have when we are asleep. But the word dream fills the expressions we use when we are awake. The stuff dreams are made of is a romantic expression. It describes a really wonderful experience. For example, let's say you really love flight and space travel. So, a friend invites you to see a launch of a space shuttle. She even invites you to meet the astronauts who are going to fly into space. After this experience, you can say to her, "That was the stuff dreams are made of. It's a dream come true." A dream come true is exactly that, a dream that has become reality. Let's make it even better. Let's say your friend can get you on the space shuttle. You can actually wear a space suit and sit in the flight commander's seat. That would be beyond your wildest dreams. In other words, even you could not have dreamed up such a wonderful experience. However, once you enter the space shuttle, you feel ill. Your hands shake, and you are unable to talk. The astronauts try to help you, but you freak out, yelling, "Let me out of here! Let me out of here!" When you start throwing the flight manuals around the cockpit, the police come and remove you from the shuttle. It's a disaster. A nightmare. After the police take your statement and your fingerprints, your friend tries to calm you down. She tells you that everything will be okay. But all you can say to her is, "I wish it was all just a bad dream." But it wasn't. You are barred from participating in any NASA-related field trips. And now you have a police record. However, months later, your childhood dream of space travel comes back strong. You decide to become a pilot. Your friend advises against it. She reminds you that you have a severe case of claustrophobia, a fear of being in small spaces. She calls your goal of becoming a pilot a pipe dream. A pipe dream is a hope or wish that is impossible to achieve. This expression began in the late 19th century. Word experts say it refers to a dream experienced when smoking an opium pipe. Those dreams rarely come true. But you insist it is possible for you to be the first person to fly around the world with your faithful pet cat, Galaxy. Your friend, however, says, "Dream on." She could also say, "In your dreams." Both of these informal expressions are ways of saying that someone's idea is a fantasy. Friends can use them in a funny way with each other. Otherwise, both expressions can sound a little mean. Then your friend uses another informal expression. She tells you to wake up and smell the coffee. She adds that you are living in a dream world if you think you can become a world-famous pilot who flies with a cat. People who live in a dream world are unrealistic. They refuse to face facts. Your friend's remarks are hard for you to hear, but you know she is right. So you decide to write a children's book about someone who flies around the world with a beloved pet. And that brings us to the end of Words and Their Stories. I'm Ana Mateo, teaching English for Voice of America. And you know, I wouldn't dream of doing anything else. Sweet dreams of you.
Thanks, Anna. Now, we present The Making of a Nation. Here is newly elected President Harry Truman.
I want to say to you that for the next 4 years, there will be a Democrat in the White House and you're looking at it.
Presidential elections are exciting events in American politics. But few have been as exciting as the one in 1948. And few have had such surprising results.
This is NBC Television.
We have obtained the results from the state of Ohio, which assures victory for President Truman and Senator Barkley. With Ohio's 25 electoral votes, President Truman and Senator Barkley will have a total of 266 votes in the Electoral College. This is the minimum figure necessary for victory.
Four candidates were nominated for president in the 1948 election. One was the man already in the White House, the candidate of the Democratic Party, President Harry S. Truman. Truman had been the party's vice presidential candidate with Franklin Roosevelt in 1944. When Roosevelt died a year later, Truman became president. He was the one who made the decision to drop atomic bombs on Japan to end World War II. But Truman did not do well during his first few months in office. He made several serious mistakes. He had trouble with the economy and organized labor. His party lost control of the Senate and the House of Representatives in the congressional elections of 1946. Most Americans had little faith in Truman's ability as a leader. They expected that he would lose the presidential election in 1948 if he chose to be a candidate. President Truman did choose to run. He took several strong steps to show his leadership in the months following the Democratic defeat in the congressional elections. Truman called on Congress to pass a number of laws to help black people. He took firm actions in his foreign policy toward the Soviet Union. These included the Marshall Plan and the Berlin Airlift, as we discussed in our last two programs. And he began to speak out with much more strength to the American people. Truman succeeded in winning the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. He chose Alban Barkley, a senator from Alabama, for vice president. Senator Barkley and I will win this election and make these Republicans like it. Don't you forget that, Truman declared in accepting the nomination. The Republicans nominated New York State Governor Thomas Dewey. Dewey was a wise and courageous man. He was also very serious. Truman campaigned by telling the voters that Dewey did not understand the needs of the average American. He called Dewey a candidate of rich people. One day, Dewey got angry at a railroad engineer because his campaign train was late for a speech. Truman said this proved that Dewey did not understand the problems of railroad engineers and other working Americans. He tried to make the election a choice between hard-working Democrats and rich Republicans. Two other men also were candidates for the presidency. Both were from newly created parties. One was Strom Thurmond from South Carolina. He was a candidate of the States' Rights Democratic Party, also known as the Dixiecrat Party. Most of his supporters were white people from the southeastern part of the country. They opposed giving full rights to black people. The other candidate was Henry Wallace of the Progressive Party. His supporters believed that Truman had turned away from the progressive ideas of Franklin Roosevelt. Both Thurmond and Wallace had broken away from the Democratic Party. Most political experts believed these two candidates would take votes away from President Truman. They believed the Republican Dewey would surely win the election. President Truman did not have strong public support. But Harry Truman was a fighter. He did not believe the election was lost. He took his campaign to the American people.
On election day, the president, the Congress, the governor, the mayor, all cease as the government. You are the government, because then you decide what sort of a government you want. And when you do like you did in 1946, when two-thirds of you stayed home, you get just what you deserve. You got that good-for-nothing 80th Congress.
He said he had always campaigned by going around, meeting, and talking to people. Running for president was no different, he said. He just got on a train and started across the country to tell people what was going on. He wanted to talk to them face to face. When you stand there in front of them and talk to them, he said, the people can tell whether you are telling them the facts or not.
If you give the Republicans complete control of this government, you might just as well turn it over to the special interests, and we'll start on a boom and bust cycle and try to go through just what we did in the 20s and end up with a crash, which in the long run will do nobody any good but the communists.
Truman campaigned with great energy. He made hundreds of speeches as his train crossed the country. It became known as the Whistle Stop Campaign because it stopped at some of the smallest towns and villages in the country. Truman gave speeches from the back of his campaign train, the Ferdinand Magellan. He spoke to farmers in Iowa. He visited a children's home in Texas. And he discussed issues with small groups of people who came to visit his train when it stopped in rural areas of Montana and Idaho. Dewey and the Republicans laughed at Truman's campaign. They said it showed that Truman needed votes so badly that he had to spend his time looking for them in small villages. Truman said the criticism proved that Republicans did not care for the average American. Dewey also campaigned across the country by train, but he showed little of the fire and emotion in his speeches that made Truman's campaign so exciting. Dewey's speeches were safe. One reporter wrote that Dewey was acting like a man who had already been elected and was only passing time waiting to take office. Dewey had good reasons to feel so sure of being elected. Almost every political expert in the country said Truman had no chance of winning. The Wall Street Journal, for example, printed a story about what Dewey would do in the White House after the election. And the New York Times said that Dewey would win the election by a large majority. Truman refused to accept those views. Instead, he spoke with more and more emotion against Dewey. Most Americans still believed that Truman would lose, but they liked his courage in fighting until the end. One supporter shouted, "Give 'em hell, Harry," them being the Republicans. Soon, supporters across the country were shouting, "Give 'em hell, Harry." Truman made special appeals to working people, Jews, blacks, Catholics, and other traditional supporters of the Democratic Party. In his final radio speech before the election, he promised to work for peace and a government that would help all people. Then he went to his home in the state of Missouri to wait with the rest of the country for the election results. Republicans across the country greeted Election Day happily. They were sure that this was the day that the people would choose to send a Republican back to the White House after 16 years. Some of the early voting results from the northeastern states showed Truman winning. But few Republicans worried. They were sure Dewey would be the winner when all the votes were counted. The Chicago Tribune was also sure who the next president would be, declaring in a huge headline, "Dewey defeats Truman." But the newspaper was wrong. Everyone was wrong. Everyone, that is, except Harry Truman and the Americans who gave him their votes. Truman went to bed on election night before all the votes were counted. He told his assistant that he would win. He awoke early the next morning to learn that he was right. Not only did he defeat Dewey, as he thought he would, but he won by a good number of votes. And he helped many Democratic congressional candidates win as well. The Democrats captured both houses of Congress. After the results were announced, as heard in this old recording, Truman showed his sense of humor by joking about the predictions of his defeat.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company, Kelton Bourne was saying, "While the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote, we have yet to hear from the president." Very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority. And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
Harry Truman would make many difficult decisions as America moved into the second half of the 20th century. He would send American troops to help the United Nations defend South Korea against aggression from the North. He would join other Western leaders in establishing a new alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They established NATO to provide for the joint defense of Europe and North America. Truman and later presidents would make decisions to send large amounts of economic and military aid to countries around the world. Many of these decisions were necessary because of America's new responsibilities after World War II as the leader of the Western world. Tomorrow, we will continue the story of America's 33rd president, Harry Truman. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. Thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.